Appreciate the message that Elder Mosley's brought forth, and I desire an interest in your prayers the time that we stand before you. There's a little log church house in the hills of Kentucky, and Brother Ron Drake's family has attended there for many years and been members of the church building there. Little insignificant church building, and a couple of the members that used to attend years ago was, I believe his name was Tom and Sarah Lincoln, and they raised their family in this little church. Their son was named Abraham, and he later became the president of the United States of America. He grew up going to the Little Pigeon Primitive Baptist Church in the hills of Kentucky. He later attributed much of his learning and knowledge to his mother and to the upbringing that he had. We sometimes get lost in the shuffle. We sometimes get discouraged, and we sometimes think, does it really matter, the little life that I have? Does it really matter about the little church that I go to? There's a lot of other places that I could go to church, and there's a lot of larger congregations, and there's a lot of places that appeal to some of the interests and desires of young folks, and maybe it's all for naught. Little church I go to is sort of old-fashioned, sort of backwoods. Maybe I should consider something that's more modern. Maybe I should consider something that is really addressing the current times in which we're living. And it seems like in the day in which we live, just the old-fashioned style of singing hymns and praying and hearing the preached word, it doesn't really have a following or an interest anymore. Maybe there's other thoughts that's crossed your mind or that's come into your mind, and you think, does it really make a difference? Does it really matter? I was going to speak out of Psalms but this morning, that Psalm 34, but felt reconvicted about speaking to you out of Matthew chapter 5. And if the Lord would bless us for a little while, very familiar text, and I pray the Lord will give us a little bit of light on this. Matthew chapter 5. You've heard it preached before, and especially many times. Last weekend, I had the blessing of attending the third annual, it's referred to as the Salt and Light Conference. There are 9 messages that are brought forth, and each one is by an Old Baptist minister. And it is tailored specifically for, although others attend, is tailored specifically for the young folks. A group of parents that were concerned about losing their children to the world when they go to college, when they go into the workplace, they begin to be concerned about a lot of the issues that young folks face. And so they wanted to get together and just worship the Lord and hear ministers preach on these very topics that young folks deal with. And so 3 years ago when they met, I think they had maybe 50, 60 young people that attended. Last year there was 125 that attended. And this year it had grown to 242 young people. And these are young folks that are between the age of 15 and 25 or 30 that are just about to graduate from high school, many of them, and start college, and their whole life is going to change. Last year, the topic that I was asked to speak on was about addictions. This year, the topic that I was asked to speak on was about what the Bible has to say about earning or making a living, about saving, about giving, and about spending. And afterwards, there is a question and answer session. The two ministers, Elder Dickie Hobbywox, he delivered his message first, and then I delivered mine. And then the two of us were asked to sit up here on each side of the pulpit, and we were open game. The young folks could ask any questions that they wanted to. They were passed out 3x5 index cards, and they could write down their questions about that were related to the topics that we spoke on. I told them that it had been 25 years since I'd sat in a setting like that, and it was when I was ordained, and it was Mike Rogers on one side, and I was on the other side, and I was looking at the stern faces of all those old ministers, and I thought, I'll never have to do this again. And so I asked them to go easy, and they did. But they had some real serious, up-to-date questions. Elder Huffman was there. God blessed him. Jeff Harris, his message was, give me liberty or give me death. And concerning the church and the day in which we live, I'd encourage you to go to Sermon Audio and look up the messages from the Tyler Primitive Baptist Church. It will be a blessing to you. The theme of the meeting, though, was Matthew chapter 5. It's referred to as the Salt and Light Conference. And the theme is, out of Matthew 5, ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt hath lost its savour, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out, to be trodden under the foot of men. Ye are also, he says, and this is Christ delivering this message, ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. We spoke on this briefly on Wednesday night. Bray had some outstanding encouragement about how to shine our light. I want to speak to you for just a few minutes, and I want to look at, I don't know that I've ever addressed this in detail, but if the Lord would bless us, I want to look at the verse 13. Ye are the salt of the earth. First of all, He's talking to you and I. He's talking to children of God. He's talking to people that are heaven-bound. He's talking to that group of people that Brother Asa was talking about, the chosen of God, the elect of God, those that Christ died for. That's who He's talking to. So He starts out, young folks, listen up, because this is super important. And when Satan begins to put some doubts in your mind, you can go back and you can grab a hold to these verses that He's talking about me. I am the salt of the earth. I am the light of the world. Now, He teaches a principle right here, and He says that the salt has an effect on those that are around. He says right here, He says, if the salt has lost its savor, I don't understand that fully, other than to mean that if the salt has lost its benefit, then it's really not going to help those that are around. How could we lose the effectiveness of being salt and having the influence of those that are around us? Here's a couple of examples. There's a young man that you all know and love, he and his wife dearly, that live up in New Jersey. Brother John Karpinski and his wife, I can't think of her name, Mallory. I know it like I know my own, but I can't think of it. So, Brother John and Sister Mallory. Brother John worked at a supply house And he met a gentleman there that was different than the other folks that were there. He met a gentleman there that even though he worked in the same workplace with other folks, he didn't join in with them. He didn't go out partying. He didn't go out drinking. He didn't change his language and start talking like they did, throwing out cuss words here and there. But he stood out and he was different. He tried to do his job, and he tried to do it in such a manner that his boss was honored. His boss, he realized, was the Lord Jesus Christ. And he didn't know that anybody was looking on at that time. That gentleman was Brother Van Solik. Brother John said, I noticed he was different. And I was curious about it. Now, you want to know how witnessing works in the Scriptures? Here it is. So, by the difference in Van's life, by not fitting into the world and embracing the world wholeheartedly, he noticed that there was a difference. He also noticed that there was a joy that he had, that he said, I didn't see others have around. By the way, Christians, we don't have to go around with a sad, sorrowful face all the time. In fact, the Apostle Paul says, and he says it twice, and I think he says it so that we'll take heed to it. He says, rejoice in the Lord always. Now, some of us are slow to get it. And so he said it twice for the rest of us. He says, rejoice in the Lord always. And he says, again I say, rejoice. If we're not happy in the Lord, I'm not saying that everything's going right, everything's going smooth. You can rejoice even when things aren't always perfect. In fact, as a Christian, you're going to experience that it's not always going to be perfect, but yet you can rejoice in the Lord because you're not rejoicing in the circumstance, you're not rejoicing in the situation, you're rejoicing in the Lord. You won't be discouraged if you always rejoice in the Lord. Now, if you rejoice because you just got a raise, or you just got a promotion, or you got a new house, or you got a new set of clothes, that's one thing, but that'll go away. But he says, rejoice in the Lord always. That's good news for every one of us here. God is not going to disappoint you. He's not going to ever shortchange you. If you're not rejoicing, if you're not happy, then it may be that we're trying to find rejoicing and happiness in other things other than the Lord. He says, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say, rejoice. For Christians, for children of God, the happiest you're going to ever be is when you're happy in the Lord. When you're happy in the Lord. Well, ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It made such an impact upon Brother John Karpinski's life, who he said, I didn't know anything about the spiritual things of God. I wasn't looking for the spiritual things of God. I didn't know anything about the spiritual things of God, but I saw a difference in his life, and I began to ask questions. And then I began to want some of what he had. And now Brother John Karpinski is a faithful member of the church at Southampton, and he's even exercising in the pulpit, and God may someday even call him to preach the gospel. But it started by God using Brother Van to be the salt of the earth. You're the salt of the earth. We're called to make a difference. We're called to be different and called to make a difference. We are. Sometimes I get a little bit discouraged when we get a group of folks together and we travel up to New York and maybe there's only a handful of folks that are up there. and get discouraged because there's so many other distractions and activities that keep folks from worshiping the Lord, that is discouraging. But I realize something in this verse right here. You and I are called to be the salt of the earth. Satan doesn't want you to have any effectiveness on your neighbors, on the people you work with, on anything that's around you. But I want to show you what a preserving effect your influence may have on those that are around you. And then maybe you'll be encouraged, like I've been, that these little groups at Mount Carmel and little groups at Wilmington, little groups at Columbia, little groups in New York, little groups in Boston, that there is a benefit in it. And it's through a preserving effect that you have because of God. Now, I can remember my grandmother saying that when they grew up, they didn't have refrigeration, so when they would slaughter a pig, she said they would bathe it in salt. Anybody ever done that? And they would hang it up in the smokehouse. And I said, well, Grandmother, how did you keep the flies away from it? She said, we didn't. But the salt had a preserving effect on it. Anybody here ever sprung their ankle? I know, Grace, you surely have. Anybody ever heard of the old-fashioned term Epsom salt? Sister Hayes has. I don't even know if they still make it. But it seems to make things better. Anybody here? Now, I know there's some that may have some other recipes that maybe our grandparents or great-grandparents have passed down, but anybody ever had a sore throat? You ever gargle with hot, salty water? And didn't it make a difference? I want to show you what a difference a little group makes. In Genesis chapter 18, back in about the 14th chapter, it starts out, and at 14th or 15th, it's talking about Abraham and Lot. Lot was his nephew, and they were, it says that their provisions were great. They had a lot of cattle, they had a lot of herdsmen, and it says that it was so great that in chapter 13, it says there became a strife, not between Abraham and Lot, but between the herdsmen of Abraham and Lot in chapter 13. And it says that Abraham said, Lot, I don't want there to be a strife between you and me. And he said, Lot, and this is important, he says, I don't want there to be a strife between you and me. He says, I don't, in fact, between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, because he said, Lot, and this is something that we ought to take heed to, because it does carry weight. It carries weight in the church. It carries weight in our families. He says, I don't want there to be a strife between us. He says, for we be brethren. And I think he's certainly talking about a natural relationship here. He says, I'm old Uncle Abraham, you're my nephew Lot. And he says, I don't want there to be any strife between us. And so old brother Abraham, who was the wise one and was the wealthy one and had probably contributed to Lot having what he had, old brother Abraham, he just says to Lot, he says, Lot, in order for us not to have a strife, he says, you pick which side you want to go and take your herdsmen. If you want to go to the left and you want to take this land over here, then he said, I'll take this land over here. If you want to go over on that side, then I'll take what's left. He says, Lot, you choose and I'll take what's left over. Now that's good instruction for us in the church. It's good instruction for us in our lives. It's good instruction for us in our families. I shared on a Wednesday night the example that Brother Mark had shared that he heard on the radio about a gentleman that was buying a piece of property. And forgive me, Brother Mark, if I don't get the details just right. But the gentleman was buying a piece of property and he went to the settlement of that property. And as soon as he had settled on the property, on the piece of property that he had, the neighbor came over. And he said, "So you're the new owner of this property?" And he said, "Yes, sir, I am. I'm your neighbor." He says, "You just bought yourself a lawsuit." Because he said, "You see this fence? This fence is 1 foot over on my property. And so you just bought yourself a lawsuit." Isn't that what he said? And so the gentleman that told him that he was going to be sued, he takes his shovel and he goes out there and he starts digging. And the neighbor said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm moving the fence." He said, "Well, you're not moving it a foot, which is what you're on my property. You're moving it 2 feet." He not only moved it back to where it was supposed to be, he said, "In order for there not to be any division or contention or strife among us, I'm going to give you an extra foot of property. I'm not going to take any chances. I'm going to give you an extra foot of property." Abraham's saying that right here. He says, "Lot, you go out there and you pick the very best. I'll take what's left over." That'd be good for all of us. It would. Well, look at what he says right here. Lot looks down, and he's standing up, and Lot looks down, and it says that he sees the well-watered plains of Sodom. He sees some fertile land. He sees some land kind of like what you see up in Carroll County. Now, I'm not comparing that to Sodom at all. I'm just saying that it was beautiful land. You stand up there, and it was rolling hills. There were some trees over there. In fact, there was a lake over here, and it really looked nice. Probably looked to the other side, and it was more like a desert area. That's what he was going to leave to Abraham. But he was going to pick the choicest, what looked like it looked the very best. Although it didn't work out well for Lot, his choice was not "What would the Lord have me to do?" But he was saying, "What do I want to do? What's going to look good for me? What's going to look good for my wife and my kids?" He said, "Isn't it going to be nice to live over there in those beautiful green hills?" And so Abraham said, "You pick, I'll take what's left over." It goes on down, and you know the story of Sodom and Gomorrah and the wickedness and the sinfulness that was within the city. You know the ungodliness that was in the city. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes I get discouraged at some of the laws that are passed down in Washington, D.C. It can be very, very discouraging. But I'm like Brother Zach Guess. He said, "This is a great day to be among the old Baptists, because we're going to have opportunities to shine our light that we may not have ever had in the past." Look at what he says. You want to see how salt has a preserving effect right here? Look at this. Chapter 18, he comes down and God is in his mind. I don't say in his mind. I don't know how it works, but God is expressing to us that he's deciding, I don't know how all that works, but it's going on in the mind of God, however that is. And God may not have a mind like you and I have. He doesn't. But he says, "Should I tell Abraham what I'm about to do? Should I tell Abraham what I'm about to do with the wicked cities of Sodom and Gomorrah?" He says, "The sin of that city is so great and it is so grievous, and the sin of that city, the scent of it comes up, and it has such a horrible scent And it is so wicked and it is so grievous, he said, should I tell Abraham what I'm about to do? Now, God can commune with himself and with his Son and with the Holy Spirit. But he says right here, he says, for I know Abraham. He said, this is one thing I know about Abraham. He says, I know that he will command his children, verse 19, and his household. He said, Abraham has such a tight ship, you might say, in our modern day terms, that I know that Abraham's going to command his children and his household after him, and that they shall keep the way of the Lord. God is saying this about Abraham. Now, isn't that something? God could have said anything, but God noted the faithfulness of Abraham right here, and God said, I see that Abraham is going to command his children and his household in the ways of the Lord. And I think that's such an encouragement to us. It's such an encouragement to parents. If Satan ever begins to sell you the bill of goods, that it doesn't really matter. Does it matter if I'm a godly father, if I'm a godly mother? Does it matter if I train my children in the ways of the Lord? It seems like that it's so disheartening when they make the wrong decisions, when they go the wrong way. Does it make any difference at all? God says it does. God said about Abraham, he says, I know that he's going to direct his family and those that are around him in the ways of the Lord. And God said, I'm going to honor him by telling him what I'm about to do. He said, I'm going to go down and I'm going to destroy that wicked city because of the sinfulness. If you want to go and read in detail about the sin of Sodom, chapters 18 and 19. God says it's a very grievous sin. And don't think at all that today that it's any less grievous before the eyes of God. Look at what he says here. He says to Abraham, I'm going to destroy this city. And Abraham comes to God. And I'm sure Abraham in his mind is thinking, well, my nephew Lot's over there, his wife, his children, his son-in-laws are there. I'm sure they've got a lot of friends that they've established. I'm sure he's got some working associates. I'm sure he has some folks that he's done business with. And he says, Lord, would you spare that city if there's 50 righteous in the city? Would you spare that city? God said, yes, Abraham, I will. If there's 50 righteous that are in Sodom and Gomorrah, I'll spare the city. Abraham begins to count up at least the ones that he knows, and hold on to that thought. He begins to count up the ones he knows, and he doesn't come up to 50, the ones he's aware of. So he gets a little nervous and he says, well, God, how many have you ever gone back to God and you say, well, how about this way, God? Abraham goes back to him and he says, well, God, how about if there's 45, would you spare the city? He said, yeah, I'll spare the city. He goes back and Abraham comes back to him again and he says, well, God, how about 40? How about 30? How about 20, God? Would you spare that city if there's 20 righteous in the city? Now, wouldn't you think that there'd be 20 righteous in the city? Abraham's counting up Lot, his wife, his two daughters, their sons. Maybe they had some kids. He's beginning to count it up. Now, he didn't know the mind of the other folks.
But he says, God, would you spare it? If there's 20 that are righteous in the city, he said, yes, I'll spare it. And then Abraham goes back to God. And he says, God, would you spare that city if there's 10 righteous in the city? And God said, yes. But the sad part is, there was not 10 righteous in the city. Now, you want to see what a preserving effect that salt has? God was willing to spare these two cities for 10 people that were salt of the earth. When I stay overnight in New York, I stay at the Hepzibah House, which is out of Isaiah. And in visiting with the directors, it's a Christian home, five stories, an old home, five stories tall, that caters to folks that are involved in the ministry in New York City. And they said, we're encouraged. It's up from 1% to 3% that profess to be Christians in New York City. Did you know it may very well be that that's why God has spared that city? I don't think I'm stepping out on a limb to say that it may very well be that that little meeting that's held in a little back room somewhere may be the reason that God is sparing an area. I'm not so naive to think that we're the only ones that would be salt and light in a city. But it's the ones that we know of. And that's how it was with Abraham. He began to count up the ones that he knew of. Lot, his wife, his children. I believe that it's very likely that that old couple that lived in Washington, D.C., that you knew so well, Elder and Sister Compton, that were blessed to live there about 80 years in Washington, and humbly went about doing their business and serving the Lord, trying to restore old church buildings and trying to have a service and trying to have a meeting. God bless that. And it may very well be that God spared that city because of the faithfulness of a little old couple. It may be that God has spared. Wow. It works, Brother Kilby. Too good. Maybe the Lord's talking to us. It may be that God has spared Washington, D.C. If God, let me tell you, if God didn't spare it, these terrorist attacks, these random shootings and these random bombings would be so much worse. Don't think it's so because we're so knowledgeable and because of all the security that goes on at the airport. There's not even hardly much security still there. Some folks complain about it. I don't complain about it. I'm glad that there's security. I am. It may be that God has preserved Washington, D.C. for those little churches like Columbia, like Bethel, Washington, like the... There's others I can't get Sister Kathy knows the name. They named them after creeks, Goose Creek, Robinson Run, all those little creeks down in Virginia. But it may be that God has spared our nation because of the little churches. It may be that God has spared the United States of America because of these little churches of 10 or 15 or 30 people scattered throughout the land, simply because His salt is having a preserving effect. Don't ever discount the benefit that you may have as salt of the earth. You may right now be influencing somebody that it'll have an impact upon their life long after you're gone. I went last week after my flight was canceled. And by the way, I missed being here and I missed being with the folks. But anytime they cancel a flight, I'm just as satisfied as I can be, because I don't want to get in a plane unless everything is just as good as it can be. So I hopped in a rent car and drove 252 miles to my home church in Lubbock, Texas. I thought, this is a lot closer than I normally am. And so I left about 5 in the morning, drove to my home church in Lubbock, Texas, and I enjoyed it very much. But it's like mixtures of joys and sorrows, because so many of those people that I knew, probably 70 or 80% of them, have now gone to be with the Lord. But I thought back as I drove back that 250 miles, I thought of what an impact they'd made on my life during that short time that I knew them. And I thought, even though they've gone to be with the Lord, it's like Revelation chapter 14, 13 says, they rest from their labors. Their labors cease, but their works do follow after them. It still has an impact upon my life, those that have gone on. It still does here at Mount Carmel, those that have gone on. You may not realize what an impact you're having upon the lives of those that are around you. You may never know it. God may not show it to you. You may think, oh, it doesn't really matter if I go to church. It doesn't matter if it's a priority. It doesn't really matter. It does matter. God says it does. It matters. You are being the salt that God's called you to be, and you have an effectiveness that God has given you. He says it does make a difference. It may be that God has spared this nation in which we live because of the little churches that are scattered out throughout the land. Well, we're out of time. I'm going to give you one verse to grab a hold of and hold with you. If you ever get discouraged, like sometimes I do, Brother Caleb, and wish Jeremy was here, but you see all the liberalism that's going on in so many areas, even in the Boy Scouts now, the course that they're going. But it may be that you have an influence upon others that are involved. Look at what he says here in 1 John chapter 4. He says, here's a promise. And this is so good for us to be reminded. That's, you know what, that helps faith. Faith sometimes gets cold, it gets to where doubts, it gets weary, it gets little. But when you hear the promises of God, either through the preaching or the reading of God's Word, it encourages your faith. And here he says this, verse 4. Ye are of God, little children. And I think it certainly could be little kids, but it could be all of us, children of God. He says, ye are of God. God is your Father. Now that ought to, if we didn't learn anything else today, when we leave this place, we ought to be happy in the Lord, because we know that God is our Father. You may have complained about your natural father, your natural mother, but right here, we're all winners. We're all in a good position, because he says, little children, your Father is God. He says, ye are of God, little children. And he says, and here's some of the benefits of being of God.
He says, "Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them." Don't you think for a minute that Satan is stronger than the Lord? Satan throws all these things to distract us along the way. Sometimes Washington, D.C. gets involved a whole lot. Sometimes a little, sometimes a lot. And Satan uses those things to distract us and slow us down. But I want to encourage you. He says, "You are of God, little children." And he says, "Greater is He that is in you. Greater is He that is in you that is in the world." He says, God in you is greater than all the world put together. You've got God in you. You think you can't stand against the fiery darts of Satan? You think you can't stand against his temptations, his enticements, the distractions that he has? He says you can because of Christ dwelling within you. Now, we may choose not to. We may follow Satan. We may follow his devices. We may be diverted from the way. We may slow down in the way. But you have the Spirit of God within you, and that's greater than Satan himself. And he said, as a result, you can overcome the world. He means all the distractions, the devices, all the enticements, all the temptations. Not because you're so strong yourself, but because of what's dwelling on the inside. Don't let Satan sell you a bill of goods that you can't do better, because you can. Don't let Satan sell you a bill of goods that you don't have an impact on others that are around you. God said, "I designed you that way. I designed you to be salt of the earth. I designed you to shine your light." And that is what your purpose is here in this life, is to shine your light to others around you so that others will see your good works and then they'll glorify your Father which is in heaven. That ought to be our greatest desire, to live a life that's going to honor the Lord and point others to the Lord Jesus Christ. May God bless you.